Raisley Funeral Home is located. Why? For well over 100 years, the Raisleys have been helping families around here deal with loss. Not an easy thing to do, but the Raisleys have taken great strides to pass that tradition on from generation to generation. The tradition of providing compassionate and complete services. And now, the fourth generation, Carrie Raisley, has carried on the name while still providing that same Raisley compassion. Carrie Raisley is ready to help you, whether it's pre-need counseling and arrangements or just knowing that she's going to be there when the need for her expertise and service arises. The Edward L. Raisley Funeral Home in the quiet village of Prospect, a choice you won't regret. Call Carrie Raisley today at 865-2442. Let her arrange for you to stop by and discuss your thoughts and needs. That's the Edward L. Raisley Funeral Home in Prospect.
Weather forecast for you today. We look for some rain to continue throughout the afternoon and evening. We're going to fall temperature-wise to about 35 by this evening. That means we'll have rain, freezing rain, and sleet throughout the evening, changing to snow late tonight. Low will be around 15 overnight tonight. And we are looking for anywhere from 4 to 8 inches of snow and sleet accumulating throughout the night. Tomorrow, chance of snow, mainly in the morning, then mostly cloudy, high near 17. Going to be very cold, though. Wind chill values as low as 0 Saturday. Sunday, partly sunny and a high near 16. Still very cold as we welcome the Jacksonville Jaguars in on Sunday. Right now, we have a current temperature of 57 degrees. Sunset will be at 5:13 this evening. Along with Tracy Morgan, I'm Pat Parker reporting for your local news, sports, and weather. Tracy will be back on with you in just a moment on It's Your Turn.
WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
How long have you been there, Dave?
And so I'm Tracy Morgan, and thank you so much for being here today. It's just about, 12:32, and it's before the next storm. What are we going to say? You know, we had the windows down in the car yesterday. I told my kids, you still have to wear the jackets, but boy, we had nice weather yesterday, decent weather. And now we're going to get back into it. So if you heard the newscast, if you missed the newscast, let me just reiterate that we do have two watches that we're going to have to deal with. Actually, we have a flood watch that will continue tonight because we're in the middle of a flood warning. The warning is up until about 2:30 this afternoon. And then once we get to tonight, 4 o'clock, that's when the winter storm warning is going to take effect, and that's going to go all the way to tomorrow afternoon. So a few inches of snow out of it, slate, rain, mixed bag, it's all going to come our way, so just be very careful. And I called it the rainbow effect the other day, because remember when we were in like the single digits and then we came up to like 60, we're going back down. So we're on the other end of the rainbow, but maybe there'll be a pot of gold on the other end. I don't know. I am Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey. He's just not here today. I've said every day because we've chuckled within the office how many people will think he's retiring. No, he's not. He's just not here today. So I'm going to take the helm of the ship, and we're going to go with this again today. So welcome and thank you. This show, what we're going to do today, for about an hour, we are going to talk to a few pastors, and we have three that are joining me immediately, and I talked to a fourth about church attendance. What are they seeing? And we're not talking about any particular church here in the Butler area. We're not pinpointing anyone in particular, but we're talking about that larger conversation. So that'll be about until 1:30 or so. And then at 1:30, I'm joined by Ruth Ann Bowen of the Bowen Agency, and she's going to be talking about websites. Now, as a matter of fact, we're going to talk about church websites, so we'll fold that in. But it's more about small businesses. If you have a website, how should it be running? Do you have the things on the website that make it user-friendly? Is it simple? Is it crowded? So we're going to talk about all of that. even if you have an existing business, you might want to rethink your plan of what you have. You have to be mobile nowadays, that's what she says. So that'll be at 1:30 this afternoon. So let's get started with this. So I have Pastor Barry Caroline, and he is on the phone with us, and he is from St. Luke Lutheran Church and School in Cabot, Pennsylvania. I also have with me in studio Reverend Pastor or Pastor Al Toberman. He's with St. Mark's Lutheran Church, and it's not all about Lutherans. So we have Pastor Dave Maitland, and he's with the First Baptist Church. And I had talked to, Pastor Carnes of Church of God, and we had talked yesterday off the phone, so we're going to relay some information of his opinions, too, and I'll be able to relay that, and we can discuss as well. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you both in the studio. How are you both doing?
Doing great.
Good. Nice to see you. Yeah, Pastor Dave, Pastor Barry on the phone. How are you?
I am well, waiting for more winter.
You're probably the only one. All right, so let's talk about this conversation. It's a big conversation because we could be talking about the churched end of folks, the unchurched. You could talk about folks that are regular churchgoers. You could talk about visitors coming into a church. So it's a very big conversation. But the reason I wanted to do this is because I have talked to pastors and have had been in the congregation when things have been announced. I've been in conversations just because we work in a news department. Some churches say we've seen record numbers. Other churches will say we're dwindling, we don't know what we're doing. Some churches are closing. And throughout different denominations, I have heard that they are consolidating. And so my question is, what is really going on? So, Pastor Toberman, I'm just going to start with you. And what is it that you talk about with other pastors throughout the country? Again, we're not pinpointing anything here in Butler. What's the talk within your industry, as I like to say, about what is happening with church attendance?
It's a time right now where there is a major shift taking place, and everybody's writing about that. Christianity Today magazine, November 2017, spoke about how many books there have been in 2017 because of this shift taking place.
And as you keep talking, Pastor Toberman, why don't you pull that a little closer
sure.
to you? There we go, because I want to hear what, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and the shift, I think, is taking place that's been coming for a number of years within society, and both within a local community like Butler, where faith and family is valued very much, why demands and desires that people have caused a big difficulty for many who are working two-income jobs to be in church, and for others, all of the opportunities to do so much, to make the radical commitment in a very major time of the stress of individualism, there has been less of a sense of being Christ-centered and more of self-centered. That's a societal issue that has its effect in the church as well. And there are many other causes and issues that have been spoken to, but I've read a great deal, and we've talked a great deal in our own denomination about the shift that has occurred, and in our own community with an older population, what that means to be a vibrant church. And millennials, everybody's written about this, have been leaving the church in large numbers, are not attracted to the church. So there's so much there.
Pastor Barry, how about you?
Right now, the estimation is that probably 31% of Americans practice their Christianity, their faith, by going to church at least once a month. So in that 31%, you got once a month. But clearly, across the land, those numbers have been dropping. I think that one of the things I look at this is there are those who would say that we're in a post-Christian era, that we're on the other end of where the church used to flourish. But I've got a friend, Reggie McNeil, he writes and quite a bit on this, and he would say that we're in a pre-Christian era, that we were in the post-Christian era for quite a while, we just didn't know it. And now that the church really has lost its influence, there's something emerging, but it's just not happening in the church. It's happening in pockets throughout neighborhoods and cities and whatnot. And if the church is going to be effective, it's going to have to figure out how to tap into that movement, that growth. One last thought. I've often said to my people here, Christianity is alive and well. It's flourishing. It's abounding, but not necessarily in North America. On almost every continent in the world, Christianity is going gangbusters. But right here, it's struggling. And I think there's some things emerging that are downright exciting.
Pastor Dave, how about you?
I'm just enjoying listening to these guys. I think they hit it on the head in many areas. And I like that statement to be a pre-Christian era. That gives some hope that there are some good things coming up. Churches as a whole are getting older. And there's been many studies, even in an evangelical community, there's a study that they lose 75% of their teenagers when they graduate from school. I think this is a wake-up call for the church, that we need to look into what we can do. And like Pastor Toberman said, there are many books written on it. But I think maybe what we need to do is look toward more of a solution. And what part we can, it's like the pastor just said there, there's something going on, maybe not in the churches, but in America. We just need to see where we're at and maybe where we failed and what we can do. We can write about the problem, but I think we need to look at how we can be a part of the solution.
Did you want to add anything, Pastor Toberman?
Rod Dreher has written a book that's been very meaningful to me and widely read within some of our circles, and it's called The Benedict Option, and it speaks about the church needing to have the courage again. This is another side of the issue, to be the church without compromise, regardless of the cost. And as I think the proclamation that the church has a divine call, and the church really is called not simply to point out what is wrong, but to share joyfully in creative ways our faith. We've sometimes missed that opportunity, and especially now in this new time of smartphones and technology, we're way behind with all of the ways that people receive information about life and where happiness is to be found and being able to utilize it effectively. We're still operating so much in the 1950s or 1960s way of presenting the message, the saving truth of the gospel, and that Jesus is the one and only Savior.
Well, and when you talk about technology, let me acknowledge that both the pastors here in-house have radio programs with us. I know, Pastor Barry, you have a different radio program. So Pastor Maitland and Pastor Toberman can be heard in our family of radio stations with the Butler Radio Network. So when you talk about technology, I'm wondering, with the attendance in church, if it's increasing or lowering with technology, because some people will just say, hey, I heard you on the radio, or I downloaded the app, I heard your sermon, I'm good for the week. But is that the same as getting them into a church and going to service and being a part of a community within a church body?
It's not to be diminished. It's good for what it is, but it's not the same as being in koinonia, fellowship with other Christians who are able to give some corrective sometimes to your thinking or to what you are hearing and experiencing of God's leading in your own life. You need that, I think, reinforcement of the family, and we've been created to be a family of God, so not all of us have all insights and all gifts, and we all need to be built up through the Word, as well as we look at it in our own church, through Holy Communion, in what God does and what God brings to us. And one of the people I was talking to this last week was speaking about that the commandments, just looking at the commandments, that there are some commandments you have to make a choice to be a Christian. And part of the choice, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy, is a very definite choice. And this person was saying, I remember here so many years ago where we would talk about the Sabbath being holy and talk about the Sabbath, and then it became talk about Sunday. But now people talk about the weekend rather than about what it means to make this definitive choice to be Christ-centered. And I think many, out of desperation to reach people, have marginalized the importance of being in a growing relationship with Christ. And we have emphasized in our own church that it's not enough just to believe in God or hold a particular doctrine, but to be a follower. And so discipleship is a major emphasis. And I think that was something that got neglected for so many years.
I just want to add that, again, I talked to Pastor Carnes from Church of God, and he did give me permission to be able to share this because we had talked also about, he also has a radio program here with our family of stations with the Butler Radio Network. And when we were talking about this, I quoted him with this, it's quote unquote, but it says, radio isn't going to pastor you. I mean, a good means to be able to get the message, but what he was going on to tell me is that you don't get the community, you don't get the interaction, and without you being within the given walls of a church, you don't get to know your pastor, and then it takes away the opportunity for the pastor to pastor you. Pastor Barry, any thoughts on that?
No, I agree with that. I like that, and I would only add, it's not only that the radio won't pastor you, but it's beyond the pastor. It's the community ministering and serving and supporting each other. It's the whole community of believers. The pastor, yes, obviously, but the whole community of believers that form a family of faith. You can't get that on radio. You can't get that on TV or on the medium that people listen to. There's that missing. And nor will you mature in the faith. I oftentimes say to people, can you worship God in the woods? Yes, you can. But you will not mature and grow in the woods in the way that you could in a community of faith.
Pastor Dave?
I think our society today, even with the technology, is pulling us away from each other. I think through even American history, there have been times where society really needed the church to come to the society. I think back during the Civil War in the evangelical realm, D.L. Moody, and how he walked the streets of Chicago and started Sunday schools is where we've all now have Sunday schools.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, when we look back when boys clubs began to spring up and the YMCA and the YWCA, they were started when Christians went to the community and got the kids off the streets. And I think the church must get outside its walls and go to the community. Although we worship and we bring them in, and then as my brother said, we disciple them and we have fellowship together. It's so easy to listen to. You know, I wish I was a silver tongue preacher that, you know, could be nationally on the radio, but most of us, I look at it this way. And God allows this. There are men who are like dolphins. They are great speakers and they're great things. But most of us are the carp. We just kind of work the bottom of the pond and work the daily thing, everything. And it's a great job, and it's that. But when you just listen out there, you don't get everything that they're saying. You don't get the discipleship. You don't get that caring during a funeral and things like that. There has to be an attachment. But you have to start somewhere, and I think we need our courage back, and we need to go to the community. And I see some things in town, maybe speak a little bit later on, not to talk too much, that I see that are happening that way, which is very good.
For us being out into the community is what you're saying.
Yes, I think churches need to have outreach ministry. If we're going to sit there and wait for them to come to us, then D.L. Moody would have just sat back, or the boys clubs or the YMCAs would have never started. They were really started. If you go up to Cubs Hall and you go in the back room, there's a fireplace that says, "Remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth." That was started for that purpose, to share the gospel and to change people's lives. Otherwise, everything lends ourselves to superficiality, and Christianity doesn't work well with superficiality. It really works well in two areas, in the discipleship, then also under suffering.
There's an article that I read that I'll read this out of this article. It's talking about value over engagement. If people are engaged, like you're saying, going out into the community, if people are seeing a value out of their experiences or not. And it says, quote, even when people say that they love the church or they say they love your church, if declining attendance is an issue, chances are it's because they don't see a direct benefit. They don't see the value in being here week after week. And then another part of this quote goes on to say, failure to see a direct benefit always results in a declining engagement. Pastor Barry, I'll start with you because I know you have to go here, but your thoughts on that.
Oh, Tracy, there's so many thoughts on this one. I agree. When people are not engaged, then you will see them disengaged, and we'll see that in declining attendance, and we'll see that in stewardship of offerings, in gifts of that nature. And many times it's because it can be that the church is not engaging, they're not connecting to people. But, Tracy, I also see a lot of pastors out there who are faithful, and they really are preaching the word with all truth and relevancy. And when people don't respond to that, I sometimes have to say to pastors, this isn't on you. You know, you're doing this faithfully, you're working faithfully. I see a lot of pastors going through depression right now because they're putting it on them. And I think at this moment, for any pastor that's listening to this, yeah, we are called upon to be relevant. We're called upon to engage our people. I do think the church misses the mark on that. And then when we do, people disengage. But I think, too, we live in a culture where loyalty of people to any type of joining of something is so much less than it used to be. So it's not just a church thing, it's a culture thing as well. And there's many things going into this mix. And maybe, just maybe, Tracy, the way we engage people is not always necessarily on a Sunday morning. I'll just say this thing real quick. I find it so ironic that in Acts chapter 1, God said, you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth. That was Acts chapter 1, verse 8. You have to go all the way to chapter 8 before you see the people spreading out to the world. And the only reason they did was because of the persecution. In other words, God gave them a command and they just sat there. And it took hardship for the people to finally wake up and smell the coffee and say, let's go. And then God used that to bless the church and the world. Tracy, we're going through a tough time right now, and there is declining attendance. I look at that again in a pre-Christian era and think, God's up to something.
Amen.
He is going to push the church where he's always wanted it to be in a different way. I don't know what that exactly looks like, Tracy, but I think it's going to be a whole ton of fun.
Pastor Barry Caroline in St. Luke Lutheran Church and School in Cabot, I know you have to go, but thank you very much for joining us.
Well, I'm honored to be with you, as always, Tracy, and with these two fine pastors as well. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to you.
All right, and you know what, Pat, we're going to take a break in just a minute. I'm going to come back and get the other pastor's reaction to this part of our conversation. So we'll be back right after this with It's Your Turn. I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey.
For so many of us, a loving pet is... well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
Small things can have a big impact. Join the Butler Radio Network as we collect warm, new socks for our Socks for Seniors campaign. Throughout the month of January, we'll be collecting socks that will then be distributed to local seniors. Over the years, we've seen firsthand how the gift of a simple pair of socks has brightened the day of many seniors in the Butler area. Help us warm the feet and hearts of our elderly neighbors during the cold winter months. Socks of all types, styles, and colors can be dropped off at the Butler Network Studios on Pillow Street until January 31st.
And welcome back. I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey today. Of course, Dave is out for another day. And so we're taking the helm today. And for the next half hour, we're going to continue our discussion about church attendance. And it was just intriguing to me because I've heard different reports throughout the past few months, few years. Some churches are saying they're consolidating, some are shrinking, some are closing, but then some will say, wow, we've had record numbers. And then you see these mega churches throughout the country, but then you, even in our area, will see very, very large churches come about. And so I wanted to talk about church attendance and attracting people. What does the church have to do? What could they do? Maybe what they're not doing. And so that's our discussion today. We were joined on the phone with Pastor Barry Carolinen of St. Luke Lutheran Church and School in Cabot. Pastor Al Toberman is with us in studio, St. Mark's Lutheran Church in downtown. Pastor Dave Maitland with us, First Baptist Church in Butler. And I also spoke yesterday off the phone with Pastor Carnes of Church of God in Butler, and he allowed me to share some of his thoughts on this particular topic. But I wanted to get your reaction to where we were with Pastor Barry in our last discussion that the declining enrollment could possibly be due to engagement, value, that feeling. Pastor Toberman, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that the churches have been, in this community, very faithfully reaching out a variety of ways, whether it has been an assistance whenever there's a cleanup that's needed because of the damage from flooding, or community meals, and seeking to provide ministry to children. Education is so important today because we're at a time now when being politically correct, and this is very different. A lot of our older members don't appreciate how different it is today when there are a lack of being able to undergird religious values in public education, society as a whole, and so valuing political correctness has made it more difficult for the church to recognize how do we undergird the faith that has been such a blessing in previous generations. And that's not because of the church not doing its job. It's because of the societal change that we are wrestling with to be able to find a way to say, you know, the faith that has really been part of our community and our nation that is not talked about outside the church, and people being reinforced in that. It's more important than ever for the church, you to bring your children to church. And so I'll have, at St. Mark's, where we have confirmation ministry, I'll have a parent say to me, we're not able to bring our child to our confirmation ministry on Sunday afternoon, 4:30 to 6, because of all the sports and what have you.
Sure.
And maybe we'll find a church that doesn't have confirmation and faith formation. And I shared with that particular parent, when that's the case, you're presuming, as you grew up in the church, were in the Sunday school through confirmation, you had a foundation to drift away from, but to come back to. Your children aren't going to have that, and you're assuming they're going to be at a place that you are. You at least know who God is and how important that faith has been in your own life. And so calling people, I think, to that kind of intentionality, that is not because the church is not doing its job or pastors, has become increasingly important for us.
It sounds like the terminology that I read was self-directed discipline.
Okay.
And when I was reading that, not to continue on the technology piece of all of this, but I was reading the article because I was interested in the thought process about technology where we can all go to a certain location to find what we agree with. And there's no opposing view. There's no opposing view would be a good description for what I was reading. But in this, you know, there's nothing to wrestle with, because nowadays we can go to an app, a website, a podcast that we agree and nobody's disagreeing with us. So there's nothing to wrestle with.
Yeah. All truth is looked at as being relative more so than was the case earlier in my ministry. And to say that all truth is equal is a fallacy. To be able to hold within the church that there is a basis of truth and the authority of Scripture is where part of our breakdown within the Christian community, looking across all denominational lines, has occurred in a major way. And in that part of our church, we've not done our job as we needed to do. Again, speaking generally.
Yes. Pastor Dave.
I think the church has been backed into a corner. I think even because of the attendance, the fear to speak. I think we have a message of the gospel, and we must speak it. There's two things that people really need. One is love. And an old preacher taught me, love is better felt than telt. You can talk a lot, and we get a lot of talk, but I really believe that we need to take a stand. When you say wrestle, this is a wrestling match. We need to share the truth and go out, and whether it be through our broadcasts, but we need not to be an angry church as far as yelling at people because...
The fire and brimstone.
Well, you know, fire and brimstone's pretty good because of the fact that if you do not know Christ, you will spend eternity in hell.
But
that's not the part. It's the angriness of it. You know what I mean? You ever been to like a singspiration where the leader is trying to lead the teens and they're not singing and he's yelling at them? And then you don't feel like singing anymore because they've yelled and screamed at you. I just think that there needs to be a determination. There's this term, you know, you're either a politician where you say what people want to hear, or you're a statesman and you tell people what they need to hear. I just received a call last night from somebody in Meadville where my ministry was, and years ago, by accident, we started a street basketball ministry. It went on for 3 years, and there were 14 of the kids that got saved. And 25 years later, another person called back and said, I just want to let you know, I tracked you down, you're not on Facebook, not that I'm mad at it, just too busy, and they said that the 15 minutes you spoke were the 15 most agonizing minutes of the evening. And I thought, you wait 25 years to tell me that? I mean, that's nice how lousy it was. And basically he said, you were discipling us before discipling was big. We all wanted to thank you. I'm now have my doctorate degree, I'm in Kansas City, I'm an elder at a church. And he began to speak of the other guys. I think in attendance, what we need to do is speak the truth and engage the community and love them. And the attendance will take care of itself. Otherwise, if we take away our message, we have nothing as a church. We lose our power. Then we're backed into the corner. The people need to hear the truth, not in an angry way. I think we've become fearful in what we say, because there's a lot of voices in society. We live in a very narcissistic society. And even when they come in, so what's in it for me? No, you don't understand. You need Christ to change your life. And this is the gospel.
I've heard many times, and I understand this, that people will say, don't follow the pastor, follow the church. Mm-hmm. But I will still say that if you are a fabulous pastor, you make a world of difference within that building, within that community. And I'm wondering, one, does church attendance increase, or do you think it would if you have more of a visible role within your community? But then my follow-up to that is going to be, I don't know if it's just you in the way of what you do, you have no time. You know, there's no time left in your day because you have so much on your plate. So what's the balancing act between being a visible pastor and being able to take a moment just to breathe for yourself.
Well, you have asked a lot there, but the first part
is that the
of
next hour
asked,
show.
It really is. And so, for the pastors who are listening, and for those who are members of variety of congregations who are listening, encouragement and support of pastors is so important today. Good churches make good pastors, and good pastors help to make good and faithful churches. But good does not always mean large attendance, and it doesn't always mean that your congregation is going to be growing like an XYZ church that may be out by the newest suburb where all kinds of houses are being built and younger families are moving. And so many of our churches that are in areas where there were farming communities one day or blue-collar communities where the jobs aren't now, that are basically older churches, and the youth that are there don't come back because the job's not there in that community as it once was or was in the farming community, are doing some wonderful ministry, but the attendance doesn't show and the churches continue to decline in numbers, and they are doing as great a ministry as the pastor who, my one daughter's a Lutheran pastor, and my wife's also a Lutheran pastor.
Okay,
one daughter's a Lutheran pastor in Loudoun County, Virginia, Leesburg, right outside Washington, D.C., highest income area in the country because of all the good jobs and what have you. And the church is grow by leaps and bounds. She tells me all she have to do is open the door and people come pouring in because it's where everybody's moving. And back in our own day in Butler, when the city population was 10,000 more, basically, than it is today, and the downtown was the center to be, the downtown churches almost couldn't help but grow, whether you're a good pastor or not. Now we've got some wonderful pastors all over, including the downtown. But it doesn't always show up in the attendance. And people look back to yesterday and think, oh, we're not as successful as we used to be because we don't have the attendance we used to have. What's happened? Well, it is perhaps a stronger church, a more vital ministry than it was back when it wasn't so hard to be the church 50 years ago.
Yeah.
But it depends where your church is located, and I don't know anybody that goes into the ministry today because it's an easy position in the amount of education that you have, unless they are truly dedicated to Christ, because you could make so much more and have a much better life, getting to the second part of what you were asking. You don't have a life of your own. You call 24/7. It's the way it needs to be when you're a pastor, and finding that balance is difficult and hard. So the church is so blessed today with as dedicated pastors that ever been, and our congregations and people really need to see that and to uplift their pastors.
Pastor Dave.
I just would like to say to any pastors listening, do your job right and be encouraged. Large attendance does not mean success. It just means opportunity to reach more people. Where people don't necessarily mean success. It could. I think, real simply, I had a desire to, my son-in-law owns an apple orchard. I wanted to go out and count the leaves on an apple tree. And people look at me like, don't you got better things to do than that? And then I wanted to count the apples on the tree. Then, thanks to Google, one of my buddies looked it up and said the average apple tree has 30 to 35,000 leaves. But an average apple tree has 1,300 apples. Well, if you do the ratio, it's 25 to 1. And so when Jesus went over to the fig tree, it was good for leaves, but it didn't have any fruit. I think our ministries need to be about fruit. Attendances can be leaves in churches, but the people that come, I find, whether it be small church or large church, they have problems, they have needs, they are hurting. I would like to say to pastors out there, do not be discouraged. If I was to coach a team, and I'm from this area and the Steelers and everything, I probably wouldn't coach the Steelers. I'd probably coach the Browns, okay, because the Browns can only go up. They can't go down anymore.
Which is true.
If I coach the Steelers and I fail, then they're going to fire me. I really think that we need to look at the situation, as that pastor said. We were in pre-Christian, not post-Christian. I think John Wesley, the Wesleyan Methodist, back, there was a Methodist church on almost every corner in America, and because these men went out to these small mining towns and gave their life in small communities. But there was revival in America. I think we need to dedicate to where God has put us. I think we need to share with this world the truth of the gospel and go beyond just getting them into the church, but seeing them come to know Christ, seeing them growing in Christ. And getting apples is a lot harder than the leaves. We don't can the leaves, we can the apples. And so that's just my thought. I pastors, sometimes we fall into the trap of comparing ourselves in the size of our thing. I need to rejoice with those pastors that have large churches. Now my prayer is that there's good fruit in those churches. And I just need to do what is, because if you look in the Bible for us pastors, He will say to me possibly, "Well done, thy good and faithful servant," not how many I had along that line.
Pastor Tomerman, I'm going to ask you this. I know, again, it could be a whole other show. This is a big conversation. We could be here for quite a few hours. But what is it that I say you generically, meaning pastors in general, what is it that you need in order for you to do your job well, in order for that circle to come back to the congregation, and then it just continued to go around, where the congregation is supporting you, you're supporting them, that helps come back to you, you go back to them. What do you need? What do pastors need?
Well, it's not trite to say, as it is always said, we pastors need the prayers of our people, as we need to be praying for them daily. That makes a difference. Prayer really works, and you can tell right off when you're at a congregation. I've served a variety of congregations, so you know when you're part of a praying congregation and when you're not, when basically people are coming, I'm just going to put it somewhat crassly, to be serviced. You'd have a great candlelight service on Christmas Eve. I want to have an inspiring service for Easter.
The perfect moment.
And,
yeah.
And I want you to be there for baptism and funerals for my family. But otherwise, unless it meets my need, I'm not really there for what God needs me to do for the church or for you. It's what the church is to do for me. And there's too much of that that's crept in to the mentality of the Christian family. And so reteaching people again what it means to be Christ-centered and to pray for one another. And then what do I need? People to undertake their own ministry as well as to help to enable them to be about their own ministry. And we in the institutional church, I'm speaking of the Lutheran church now, for many years a model worked where the pastor would preach the word, might be great on the radio, pulpit, would be very faithful in the weddings and the funerals, and the people would come to church. And it was looked at, well, the pastor does all the ministry, and we give our money, and we come to church on Sunday. And we missed in that equation enabling our people to claim their own ministry. And so what I think many of us need much more of is for people to discover the joy of their own calling, that their own purpose in life. God has a purpose for their own life as one who shares one of the ministries of the church, supports the work of the church by being there when we need members to serve on the stewardship committee, not our most popular
wink,
committee.
Wink, wink, is that what we're...
Everybody signs up for everything else but that. Or we need people to go out into the neighborhood. Oh, I can't do that. I wouldn't know what to say. But willing to go out into the neighborhood and to risk for the sake of the gospel. So that, I think, sense of pastors being the ones who don't do all the ministry for the people, but equip people for their ministry. It needs to be a paradigm shift take place big time within, I think, Protestant churches as a whole. And that's part of our teaching and one of the places where it doesn't work the same way today as it did yesterday. And if you keep trying to be presenting the gospel in a way that connected a generation ago, the gospel is the same. But the way that you need to find those connection points have changed very significantly because of lifestyle, societal change.
Yeah, a lot of different issues creeping in. Pastor Dave, I want to ask you two things. One, if you would pray for pastors as we're on the air, if you could pray for them. But first, connecting what Pastor Toberman is saying with what you were saying in the way of being out and having people have ministries that go out into the community. What do you say to parishioners who hear that and think, people get afraid to go out into the community? Some ministries are out there. They are not afraid of those, the barriers not being there. Some churches, and again, not pinpointing anybody here in the Butler area, but some churches are a little reluctant to actually go beyond their walls. So what do you say to encourage folks to be able to get out into the community?
It's very difficult in the community because our communities live in such fear, and if I were to knock on somebody's door, which is okay to do, to build that relationship. But I think each one of us has people around us that we know in our workplace that if we had some courage and caring along that line. I think one of the great faults in our country is we pay for everything in our government for people. The problem with that is there is an entitlement that comes. If I just paid for stuff for my grandkids, what they want is me. They want my time. They want me to care about them. I think we need to do our outreach ministries where we go beyond just giving people stuff, which I think is part of it, and reaching out to them in compassion, because whenever there's a flood or anything, even in Texas, we see how America still responds. But it goes deeper than that. I like what the Methodist, when we talked about solution, what's going on positive-wise, I like that the Methodist Church has the bridge service.
Yes.
Where it tailors right in along that line. And Celebrate Recovery Ministries and Katie's Kitchen. And we just started a little clothing shop called the Shop of 216, where people come in and they actually have to pay for clothing. Okay, 50 cents, a dollar. So there's a little bit of skin in the game, but then there's an opportunity to share with them these truths, the other half. When I'm with my grandkids and I tell them stories at night, I'm sharing my heart to them. It's the transfer of truth. It's not just the things. And I think that's what we need when we reach out. We need to really, our church, we need to care about people. I do believe someday the church attendance is really going to plummet because the change of the landscape. But then I think the church will grow because the church will go through persecution. And if you look around the world, when churches have, in countries and that where persecution has really expanded, it is when the church grows. We have to back up our faith. I don't know if I should say this or not. We do a street ministry in basketball.
Okay.
And our youth pastor got punched at the basketball. Well, 7 years ago when we started it, maybe all the kids in the gym would have jumped on our pastor. But that night, they jumped on the kid and stopped it. You know, I really believe that Pastor Sam lived this faith. I mean, he just took a punch for no reason, and then he helped getting the guys off the other guy. And then we sat there late at night. I said, this guy, Pastor Sam really loves you because he's sitting here talking to you with a big lump on his cheek. Sometimes we have to suffer for our faith. And I think we need to be bold about the gospel and share. And I think if we get discouraged, and we all get discouraged, but we can't be backed into a corner. We have a great mission. And I really believe that statement. This is pre-Christianity. There is a lot of suffering that's going to come. And we have an opportunity to get out and share the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I think we need to pray for each other.
We only have about 5 minutes left. I want to end with your prayer. So we'll come back to that if you don't mind, Pastor Dave. And with us is Pastor Dave Maitland, First Baptist Church, Pastor Al Toberman, St. Mark's Lutheran Church in downtown Butler. We're talking about church attendance, just going over a few issues that surround that. Also, I talked to Pastor Carnes of Church of God in Butler and then Pastor Carolina from St. Luke in Cabot as well for this issue. So one topic left, again, just about 5 minutes, then we'll end with Pastor Dave praying. One big discussion, again, could be a hot topic for a lengthy discussion, is, as I'm hearing you, it's not the gospel that's changed, it's some of the means. But there's always been the, and I'm not here to say which is better, which is worse, being indifferent, just asking your opinion, is there a shift going towards more contemporary services versus traditional? And that came up in a conversation with a different pastor where most of their services are contemporary. But he said, interestingly enough, he is noticing that they have multiple locations. And he said, interestingly enough, the youth, they are thriving for a traditional service. So out of all the contemporary services that we've had, we have now developed a traditional service. And I've always gone to traditional. I've gone to contemporary as well, but I like traditional. That's just me. But then I go to a church where we have mostly traditional and one contemporary. Does that make a difference in church attendance? Is there a swing towards contemporary? How do the traditionals, you know, stay relevant when we like that, in a sense, pomp and circumstance, the organ, traditional hymns? What's your opinion on that?
Very simply, we need both, and both are reaching some people and in our own congregation where we have a formal way of worship. It's Christ's word being proclaimed faithfully, the presence of God through what we call the liturgy being known, and seeing people's lives transformed and impacted through the liturgy, through the encounter that occurs with God, that's a vehicle for relationship with God and God being in relationship with us, because that's what worship is about. And that can take place with contemporary or traditional worship styles. But churches are dead as a doornail sometimes that are traditional, because there's not the vitality, the energy, the joy, the presence of Christ that is, I think, being exemplified, even though a liturgy, a traditional way of worship, may be followed succinctly. And there are churches that are reaching people and good point of connection for seekers and those that are looking to build worship out of their own faith and ways of wanting to have the gospel presented to them, that are doing great ministry without the kind of structure we have in a church like the Lutheran Church. But then there are also contemporary churches that the criticism is basically entertainment. People come to be entertained and aren't necessarily growing in Christ, and you don't see them getting involved in the family or saying, what can I do? Or now that I know Christ and everything that God is doing for me in my life, how can I help but serve my neighbor and bring Christ to others? And we have, I think, the debate sometimes put on the wrong scale as to contemporary or traditional.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm going through my head moments where contemporary moments in those services, I thought, wow, that's a religious moment for me. You know, mm-hmm. I had a moment. But then I think back just to the Christmas services, mm-hmm. not the perfect silent night moment, but mm-hmm. in a whole different realm where the whole church was full and mm-hmm. it's a traditional hymn. And again, it was just a moment. You know, it was just that God-given moment, because you think, wow, we are, it's just, yeah, an overwhelming feeling. Pastor Dave, want to get your feelings on it? We have about two or three more minutes, and then I'd love for you to pray.
There's a national phenomenon in the church and life where our kids don't want to listen to our parents. It's called finding our own ways. If they like conservative, we want contemporary. I'm conservative, but I was sitting with a bunch of kids one time, and they said, let's go out with the old and in with the new. And I said, how about out with the bad and in with the good? I think we need to be Christ-centered. I don't think whether it's written today or not. There's music that has no glorification of Christ, and we should eliminate that. I think our churches have to deal with the multi-generational. The older people, sometimes, I go after my grandkids. We need to go after the young people. I think a lot of older people fear the young people, and they sit away from them, and we need to devise it so we're multi-generational. It has nothing to do with contemporary conservative. It has to do with truth. I took a group of kids at one place one time, and they said, as long as we don't sing any hymns. I said, well, what do you want to sing? Well, the first thing was, what a friend we have in Jesus. And then the next one was Amazing Grace. And I'm like, everything they pick is hymns.
Yeah.
But it's just that thought we have to bridge along that line. I think it's loving one another and reaching to another. But you're going to get that natural generational problem.
I just want to throw
yes,
in here,
please,
too,
yeah.
that I think we are at a time where there's more informality in our society and need to recognize as church the importance of offering multi-worship styles and opportunities and to do it faithfully and well within the same church family.
Yeah.
And to know there's not a right or wrong, but what's faithful in your place and what do you hear God calling you to do in the place where he has sent you to be the shepherd amongst the flock.
Absolutely.
I think what they need is a Christocentric experience toward Christ, because we talk about all this narcissism and what's in it for me and what I could do. If we go to that, then we flatline in the long run. We need to, in our music and our singing, needs to be Christ lifted up. That's what the world needs. That's what they're searching for, and that's what we need to share.
Pastor Dave, we're almost out of time, so if you wouldn't mind praying for us as we sit here, for pastors in particular, but churches as well, and then we'll close out our show.
Heavenly Father, I thank you for this morning. I wasn't sure what to expect. I pray for pastors, if they're listening or they would hear any of this, that be encouraged. I pray that their lives would be centered in Christ, that they would realize that they were sent to the church for a reason, to minister, to care, and to love. I pray for the parishioners, that they would, in churches, that their life would be centered in Christ, and they would be bold. This is an opportunity for us in this pre-Christian era to go out and share your truth. There's a lot of hurting people out there. And I pray if there's anybody listening out there, I know what we want to hear, whether we like it or not, is the truth. The truth wrapped in love. You loved us so much that you gave your son to die for us at Calvary. And so I just pray, Lord, that we would not be backed into a corner. I pray that we would be encouraged, that we would advance the cause of Christ and not look at us our cup as half empty, but half full. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Pastor Dave Maitland, First Baptist Church in Butler. Pastor Al Toberman, St. Mark's Lutheran Church in downtown Butler. Special thanks to Pastor Carnes of Church of God in Butler for some conversation off the air. And Pastor Barry Carolinan of St. Luke Lutheran Church and School in Cabot, Pennsylvania. Pastor Maitland, thank you. Nice talking to you. Pastor Toberman, thank you. And folks, thank you very much for joining us for this segment of It's Your Turn. We will take a break and be back for the last segment of the day. I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Malarkey with WISR 680 AM.
We've got colder weather on the way. You know, it's going to be like in the mid-teens all week long. And so what do you need to do? You need to get to Miller's Shoes to keep your feet warm. Jimmy and all the folks down at Miller's Shoes, they just got a new shipment of fur-lined women's boots. So not only will you look stylish, but it will keep your toes warm. Your feet will be all nice and warm, so you won't have to worry about cold feet. That's not what's on the agenda during the winter. So go down there, get all the famous name brands. I mean, they've got everything you want. They've got America's favorite SAS comfort shoes, so you wear the boots out. When you get back indoors, you slip on your SAS comfort shoes and you're ready to go. They have been the number one shoe store in Butler for six consecutive years. You know you're getting good customer service. They know who you are, and they're going to make sure that shoe is fitted just right for you. They've been in Butler for 123 years. On Main Street, it's a staple of downtown Butler. Miller's Shoes, they're open until 5 p.m. daily. Check them out, 215 South Main Street, downtown Butler.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Butler Health System is more than a community hospital. It's a community of expertise trusted by our neighbors across the region. For renowned surgeon Dr. Tony Maloof, that means his neighbors are connected to a modern network of exceptional care.
While I'm part of a very close-knit group, I'm also a part of something bigger. Every day, I can see the difference this makes for my patients and for me.
But in its heart, Butler Health System retains the genuine caring of a community hospital, where patients are treated like friends and neighbors, because that's exactly who they are. And for orthopedic surgeon Thomas Mazzanegro, that caring is where it all begins.
We're committed to providing the absolute best care, and that means understanding what's important in the lives of our patients.
At BHS, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to. Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
And we're back with It's Your Turn. I'm Tracy Morgan. Welcome to it. Yes, it's a Friday, thank goodness. And the weather is just going to be what it is. So we'll just keep you updated as we go along this afternoon and over the weekend. So just be careful driving today. I know it's going to be another cold day, a wintry mix. And so, yeah, we'll just keep you updated on that. So what we're going to do to close out the show today is we're going to be talking about websites. I know we just talked a lot about churches. We may mention churches here in church websites, but we're not going to totally focus on that the entire half hour. But what I want to do is go over with you on, if you're thinking about a business, maybe you already have a business, and you don't put much into your website because you think, hey, I have it up there, people will see it, and we'll just go from there. How important it is to have certain things on your website in order to make it user-friendly, to make it attractive, to get people to come back, and why that's so important. So with us is Ruth Ann Bowen. She's the owner of the Bowen Agency, and this is what she focuses on. So Ruth Ann, hi, and I say hi again because I know we've talked just, I don't know, it was a couple months ago.
Yeah, thanks. Hi.
So
thanks
nice
for having me back.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I can't call you a contributor yet, but...
Oh, there you go.
But like we're the close. Big major of sources, right?
Yeah, right.
Here she is, my contributor.
Yeah, right.
But so, Ruth Ann, let's talk about why it is important, first off, mm-hmm. for businesses to be able to, I say, not only follow your advice, but the advice of many to have these things simple and easy to use.
Right, yes. Very, very, very important, especially if you're a small business and you have a lot of competitors. Very important to focus on what your website looks like and how it functions. Both are very, very important. So the reason why we want our website to look really good is because 9 times out of 10, your competitors looks better than what yours looks like currently. Do a little bit of research and visit your competitors' sites and see how you compare, because you may be surprised at what you find. You know, they may have gone out and hired the high-end designer. And when you're thinking about your customer and where they're looking for you and where are they trying to find you, they're online. They're not walking up and down Main Street anymore. They're walking up and down Google, so to speak. So I just heard again this morning another statistic, an updated statistic. People are spending 5 hours a day on their phones. And they're using those phones to do a variety of different things. And the majority of that time, they're researching products, looking for something that they need. And while they're at it, if they land on your website, why not make it the best looking it can be to draw them in to purchase from you as opposed to purchasing from your competitor? So looks are very important. I do workshops throughout the year, and I tell small business owners who attend, if you have an ugly website, it's hurting you more than not having a website at all.
But how does somebody know that they have an ugly website? Because to them, they may think, well, it looks fine. I like the colors. Mm-hmm. I like the layout. But that doesn't necessarily mean it translates into what the audience likes.
Yeah, that's a fair question. If your website isn't performing the way you want it to, then design's probably one of the reasons why. Either design or user functionality or both. So ask somebody. Ask somebody who doesn't have the same design style that you do. Hey, what do you think of my website? You know, what could I do better? We do free website reviews, so if you would like to have a designer input complimentary, visit thebowenagency.com and fill in the form, and I will be happy to review your site for you. We'll do a free audit and let you know what you need to change. A lot of times, if people don't have a design background, then they really should at least get some design input, professional design input as to how their site looks and functions. Because today, that online presence is so competitive. So you really want to make sure that you're making the investment to get that website to where it needs to be. And I say investment because the first question that I get from small business owners is, how much is this going to cost? That's the wrong question. You need to have the right frame of mind to understand that what you're doing is you're making an investment. Because if you think about it, if that website is working properly and looks the way that it should, the value that it's going to add to your business could be exponential. So let's say you're a business that makes, you know, $50,000 a year selling your little product widgets, right? And your website is just kind of ho-hum. You know, if a website that is designed properly and functions properly could increase your sales by 100%, is that worth it to you? The answer is yes. So you can't approach the idea of, I know I have to have a website, but how much is this going to cost me? That's the wrong approach. You need to look at it as, how much value is this going to add to my business? Because that's where I want to be spending my money.
And it seems like if you don't have a website, you're dead in the water there. If you don't go mobile with that, it seems like you're increasing your
chances. Even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. So. And you have to remember, you have to keep Google in mind, and Google is beginning to rank those websites by your mobile version, not your desktop version. That's how important the mobile version is to your business. Because like I said, people are spending 5 hours a day on their phones. So naturally, that's where you want to be. And there's nothing worse than looking on your phone for a website, and it pulls up, and the print is minuscule, and it's the whole page on the frame of your phone, and you have to do that little what I call pinch and squeeze. Horrible. Horrible. That's the kiss of death for any business who still has a website that's not mobile optimized. So number one priority, make sure your website is mobile optimized.
And so you just want something that you can click and go.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Very easy. Easy, user friendly.
Yeah.
So talk about fonts, colors. I know we're all different, but I've read a lot of studies or stories that will talk about, well, in one case it was scents. Like when you go into a store and they have cookies baking, you know, that smell, and then it makes you purchase more. So I've also read similar things about colors, like colors will make a user feel a particular way.
Right.
So everybody's going to be a little different in the colors that they choose. But let's go with colors first. What are good colors? What are not good colors? Color combinations and why?
Right. So you really want to start with the branding of your business. What colors are you using in your logo? Maybe your logo needs updating if you haven't updated it in a while. You know, there's a lot of psychology that goes behind colors. So we associate green with natural, organic, earthy. Blue evokes that sense of trust. So sometimes financial institutions will use like a blue. You know, yellow reminds us of being sunshiny and happy. So, you know, whatever brand your business is, choose colors that are reflecting that whole identity that you've put together. So for example, if you own a organic food company, you know, you're probably going to gravitate more to the greens and the browns because they're more earthy, more natural, living, organic type of coloring. You know, when I'm doing a branding board, like I'm working on one right now, actually for a church. And when I think of the church, because I'm familiar with this particular one, and I know a little bit more about it. You know, they want to evoke, again, that sense of trust. But they also have a lot of natural colors because they're kind of set out in a field. And I went with a scheme that is a type of a greens and browns and blues and off-white because the setting of the church and the, quote, branding of the church is evoking those colors. So that's the kind of the background of how you figure out what color scheme might work best for your business. Really think about who your brand identity is. What is the product that you're selling? What is the industry that you're in? What is it that you're trying to evoke from your consumer when they visit your website? And if you Google psychology and colors, you'll come up with a whole plethora of research and information that you can dig through where it will, you'll actually stumble upon some sites that have, you know, this color means this and this color means that. So do a little bit of research and figure out what colors you think would fit best for your branding and what you're trying to evoke to your consumer.
Ruth Ann Bowen is with me right now. She's the owner of the Bowen Agency, and she focuses on websites for small businesses. And Ruth Ann, let me ask you about fonts then, because can I say I'm a victim of it, but at the same time, I'm the one who chose the font.
There you go.
So it's my fault. But on business cards, I did it. But this applies as well as we're talking about websites.
Absolutely.
But when I picked my font, I liked it. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. And then once it came in and there had been some span of time between the order and me actually receiving it, I looked at it and went, that's kind of hard to read.
Uh-huh.
And so talk about how important the font is, just as important as the color.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, different fonts evoke different types of feelings. So, for example, if you go to a wedding website, you're going to see a lot of hand-scripty fonts, you know, evoking a very romantic kind of feel. Whereas if you go to, say, somebody in the marketing or advertising field or financial field, you're going to find fonts that are either like serif type, sans serif type, you know, very block type fonts. I am a font fanatic. So I love to just research fonts. I could spend hours literally just going through different fonts and finding different fonts. I've downloaded, I couldn't tell you how many hundreds of fonts I have on my computer. But so it's easy to get bogged down in trying to find the perfect font. But you are right. Readability is huge. So when you're talking about your website, you want to stick to three fonts or less because it helps keep the consistency. If you land on a website where someone has decided to use 10 different fonts because they like all of them, it makes the site feel very chaotic. And you don't want to evoke chaos when somebody lands on your website. You want to evoke a very controlled, less chaotic. I can't think of what the word is, but you want them to land on a site that's calm and serene and easy to read. So keeping in mind the easy readability, you want to make sure your font size is a fairly decent size. So average would be 16 point and up. Sometimes designers in their design mode go smaller. And I'm sure everybody has landed on a site where, you know, it looks really cool to have that really small font, but is it readable? And that's ultimately what you need to keep in mind is your end user. Are they able to read it? So 16 point or above, three fonts or less.
And now, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when you're talking about 6 point or 16 points and above, are you talking just headlines and your one-liners and like those words that may say, you know, blog or schedule or about me? I mean,
good question.
My question then will lead into what if we have a blog that's attached to our own website?
Right.
Are you talking about 16 point plus for the blog?
16 point for your text, for your body of text. You can go probably down to 15. You're going to have to play with it because different fonts, like if you pick one font that's 16 point but it still looks small, you may have to go up to 20. So again, keep that readability in mind. Make sure you're able to read it easily. Some other fonts are larger, so you may be able to go down to 14. So you're just going to have to play around with it. That's why the 16 point is kind of an average, because your different fonts download in different sizes. So play around with it and just make sure that it's readable. And the because ultimately, if you're not able to communicate what you're trying to say on your website, then you've kind of wasted all that time putting it together. But for headings, yeah, you can go big. Go big for headings.
I like how you mentioned that controlled feeling, if you will. But since you mentioned, okay, headings go big, and yet you're mentioning 16 plus, how far or what's my limit if I then want to use different sizes of text on a page? So, and I guess the reason I'm asking is, what if I want to make sure something particular in the middle of the page stands out? Do I bold it? Do I enlarge the size? Or is that going to start making it look erratic and not controlled?
Well, it depends on what it is that you're trying to make stand out, because maybe it shouldn't be in the text. Maybe it should be a button. Or maybe it should be in a box. Maybe it should be off to the side, designed in such a way that your eye goes to it in a box set off, and not necessarily bolded in the text. But if it is something within the body of your text, like let's say you're, you know, you really want to emphasize a certain word, certainly you can make it bigger or bold. Typically the standard is your headline is a larger size Then you have a subheading that's maybe a little bit smaller than that, and then you have your text, that is the body text, which is even a little more smaller than that. If you go into the Wix website templates, which
WIX.
Is the WIX, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the platform that I use. If you go into a Wix template, they already have that preloaded for you, so you don't even have to think about it within their templates. So if you pick out a Wix template that you really like and you go into the back end, you will see when you click on text, they already have your heading, your subheading, your paragraph fonts. They're already preloaded and designed for you within that template. So it makes it super easy. You don't even have to think about it.
See, and I think this is interesting with the different levels, because you at the Bowen Agency, of course, you're a professional, you know how to do this, and yet some of what you do is working in the Wix mm-hmm. kind of template. And that's something that I could do as well, but yet you know more about it than I do. You know,
right.
So, I mean, it's just a huge level, and that's why I wanted to talk to you, because my next question is going to go into the do-it-yourself kind of feel versus hiring a professional. Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't have the money, so I need to do it by myself,
right.
But yet those platforms like Wix has a pretty good setup that you can start with.
Yes.
But still, there's the importance of what you're talking about that we have to understand and what we're choosing.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about the do-it-yourself versus hiring a professional. Can we do it ourselves?
You can do it yourself. What you run into...
If we listen to everything you say.
Yes! That's right.
Follow everything Ruth Ann says.
That's right. As with any do-it-yourself, you will run into some kind of a learning curve. I think the DIY industry is great. But I've tried some do-it-yourself Pinterest type of projects, and they never look like the picture. So when you're talking about a website, yes, there are DIY platforms out there. I do recommend Wix. It's super easy to use, free to get an account set up. And they offer a ton of tutorial videos should you get stuck. But again, when you're going into something that you really aren't the expert in, you do run the risk of messing it up. So when you get into a template, you still will find that, oh, maybe this font will work, or, you know, I like this font here, and you start getting into it and you start adding your own touch to it. And lo and behold, by the time you're done, it doesn't resemble a template at all. Now, if you're just going to go in and change out the content, keep everything the same, you know, that's totally doable. And that's what the platform is there for. But what you're going to run into the risk of is somebody else using that same template, and if they're in the same industry and they run across the same template, then, oh, well, this looks like a Wix template, like so-and-so used. They both use the same template. Hey, this looks familiar. So it does warrant to... hire a designer so that you are a custom look. You do want your own look. You do want to be able to have people land on your website and know that it's your website. And that's where the designer can come in, and they can take that template and turn it into something far beyond what you could do just by changing out the text in the template.
Let me ask you about churches in particular, kind of our, I don't want to say theme for the entire day here this afternoon, but, you know, with a good discussion there. But what do churches do? What do they not do right? Because when we're trying to attract somebody to a church or keep somebody, you know, coming back to our church, there's things that need to be done that I don't think are being done.
Mm-hmm.
Just explain what churches should be doing at this point.
Churches are unique because they really have two types of visitors that they need to keep in mind. They have their members and their regular churchgoers, but then they also have the people who are church shopping that are looking for a home church. So when they're designing their home page, they really need to keep in mind, oh, we have two different types of people here who are going to be landing on this page. How do we direct each of them to where they need to be? So one of the trends has been for churches to put a "Hey, I'm new" tab or button on the homepage, so that if I am a visitor and I'm new to the church, I know, oh, I need to click here and I'm going to find the information that I'm looking for. as opposed to being just a regular member of the church and I want to find the calendar or whatever it is I'm looking for, service times, et cetera, et cetera. You know, then they're going to go to a different part of the site. So keeping in mind that you want to make it really easy for those people who have not visited your church before to feel welcome the minute they land on the website so that they are intrigued and do want to take that next step and actually drive to your church. Having service times and locations is huge. You want to make sure that that's very prominent. A phone number in case they want to call, any type of way to contact you, whether it's email, phone number, etc. But make it very easy for them to find the information that they're looking for. And that's just true across the board for any small business or church. You need to make it really easy for people to find the information that they're coming to your site to see.
Well, and I'm going to ask this about churches, but any business could be in this scenario where the mindset is, but this is the first moment they're going to see us. I need to tell them everything.
Big mistake. Big mistake. Less is more.
Okay.
You guide them to where they want to go. But you also have to think, what is the number one goal that I'm putting together this site for? Do I want to drive traffic to my product page? Do I want them to sign up for an event? Do I want them to call me? Do I want them to see what my specials are? So when people land on your site, keep in the front of their mind what you want them to do as well. So, for example, you know that if you're a church, you want visitors who are first-timers to be able to find the information about you that's going to draw them in. So make that prominent. Make it a button, make it a tab, make it top of line, so that when those people do land on your site, they're getting to where they need to be because that's where you want them to be. You need to have a goal. You know, this is the beginning of a new year. We're all making goals. We're all making resolutions, which the other day I heard by February 2nd are all done and gone with because we've put them off to the side. So don't do that by February 2nd. But have a goal for your website. And if you have that goal and your main goal is pushing the people to that goal, you'll see the results from your website increase.
And if you don't know the goal, we can call you, right? I mean, the Bowen Agency can help us figure this out if we
sure.
become a client and
mm-hmm.
go down that road of understanding what are my goals for this.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you about images.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that's important. It seems like you need to have an image for people to react, to
mm-hmm.
engage in what it is that you're trying to put out there.
Yeah.
Is that true? And how do we size them? What do we take? What do we use? What do we have permission to use?
Yeah, good question.
And you have about 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Oh, gee. No, okay, well, I can...
And I say that just because of a joke. Because everything we talk about, Ruth Ann and I've talked before, it's like we could keep you here for hours
yeah.
because it's so much.
It is. It's a ton. It is a ton.
It is a ton.
Ton
so
of info.
Talk about images.
Okay, images in 3 minutes. I can really make it very succinct. You need professional images. And all you photographers out there can thank me for saying that. You know, there is a whole lot of sites out there that offer free stock images. If you really want to go with the stock image route, you can go to unsplash.com. That's one of my favorites. Pixabay, Pexels, P-E-X-E-L-S. Don't just take photos, especially if you're in e-commerce and you have products to sell. Take the time and make the investment to hire a professional photographer to take the product photo pictures, because that literally is what's going to separate you from everybody else. You know that everyone has landed on some kind of a website where it's a small business, and you can tell that they took their own pictures. They're shadowy, they're pixely, they're just not high quality, they're low res. So especially for those of you who are selling products, find a local photographer who can take those pictures for you. And if you can find one that specializes in product photography, even better, because they're going to understand the lighting, the space, the white. You know, they're going to have all of the equipment that they need to do it right. You want to do it right, because that literally, when I'm on websites all the time, and when I come to a website and the business hasn't taken the time to design it right, the user experience is horrible, it's not mobile optimized, they're using images that aren't professional, I'm not buying from that website. So if your website contains all of those things that I just listed, go back and listen to the beginning of this show, because really, honestly and truly, if you want to increase your business, you need to get that website to a place where it's competitive with what everybody else is doing in your industry.
Now, if there are opportunities where we can take a picture, a lot of us use our phones, and mm-hmm. we do have a pretty good capabilities of taking great pictures off yes. of our phones. Let's say we're taking a horizontal shot outside and the sunset is going down, mm-hmm. and it actually works. Mm-hmm. Are those kind of pictures okay if we size them correctly and bring them down?
You know, I have seen good iPhone photos, but I still don't recommend to use them on a website.
Okay.
You know, and I know iPhone photos can do a tremendous job, but if it's not lit right, that's really the key. Now, if you get your lighting right and you're taking the photo with your iPhone and, you know, it looks pretty decent, then you know what? Maybe you could use it. But I wouldn't do it for long. Like maybe to tie you over until you make enough money to hire the professional photographer.
Yeah, right. Yeah, to the next step. Absolutely. Yeah. And some of us have to do that.
Right.
Ruth Ann Bowen with the Bowen Agency, last question for you, and then we need to wrap up. But there's something out there called SEO.
Yes.
What is it, and why is it important?
And how much time do I have left?
Yeah, right. Another half hour, right?
Seriously.
No, we could spend,
a long time on SEO. Okay. SEO means search engine optimization. And again, I'm going to go back to the Wix template since that's what I work primarily in. If you're a small business and you get onto Wix, you will see in the back end, they have it laid out very easily for you to fill in information for search engine optimization. So you can put in your page titles. You can alt text your images. It has something called the SEO Wiz. So when you put your website together, you can click on the SEO Wiz. It will take you through your entire site and let you know what you missed in order to be in order for your search engine optimization to work better. And you can also just click a button and it will automatically submit your site to Google. So it relieves a lot of the steps that you would normally have to figure out and learn on your own. Search engine optimization, basically, in a nutshell, is when we type in something that we're looking for, you know, say we're searching for wedding gowns,
mm-hmm.
and we put that in the Google search bar and we press return. Google does all of its algorithm, all of its trolling, all of its searching, and it pulls up what it feels like are the best results for that term that you put in. Those are called keywords. So, you know, maybe if I have a wedding gown shop, a wedding gown would be one of my keywords. So that first page that comes up is called the SERP page. It's called Search Engine Results page. What you're trying to do with search engine optimization is get on that SERP page, that first page that comes up for Google. And of course, you want to rank as high as you can on that first page. So that, in a nutshell, is pretty much what search engine optimization is. Now, there are a ton of things that you can do on your site to help you get higher in those search rankings. And knowing your keywords is one of them. There's long tail keywords, you know, maybe more like a phrase that you know that your consumers are putting in, that your customers are putting in to find you. So use those throughout your website.
Because I don't think too many of us anymore just put like wedding gown. We'd probably
right.
say, you know, where's the best one to get?
Exactly.
Or what's the location next to me? Or
yes.
yeah, there's like a sentence, a question that you're
yes.
typing in there.
Yes. And more people are using Google for research and finding those types of things and asking the longer sentences as opposed to just the shorter words. So maybe your customer is always typing in the same question.
You know what? We're on Alexa-powered devices, Butler Radio. You can get our news, the Butler News Network. You can just download the Butler Radio News Skills, what I'm trying to think of, and then just say, Alexa, what's in the news? You can also do it for all of our independent stations. Is that going to affect or change the way Google does search for a website if we're asking Alexa versus typing in some words?
Sure, and know what those words are that your consumers are using, because they might be using the same type of words and phrases over and over. And again, which is why you want to know what your keywords are.
Okay.
Which again, you know, I've talked about niching down. The further you niche down, the easier it is for you to come up higher. So, you know, if you...
So again, back to the thought of you can't give them everything. Like
right.
One person can't give everything. Find your niche, mm-hmm. focus on it, concentrate on
mm-hmm.
it.
Okay. Right. Right.
Okay. Ruth Ann, how do we get a hold of you? How do we get a hold of the Ruth Ann Bowen Agency?
Visit my website, thebowenagency.com. That's the easiest way.
And you have a new project coming up, which we'll
I
have to
do.
Talk about it
we'll
a different
come back
time
and
with
talk about it.
And,
surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Ruth Ann, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. But
sure.
Just any